Imagine this. You head into work energized and fully alert, ready to give your best for 12 hours straight with very little break in between. And your work environment? A global pandemic. Welcome to Your New Mexico Government. I'm your host, Khalil A. Colonna. The title for today's episode, Hail the Hospital Workers. I talk with hospital workers about what a day at the job is like for them and infectious disease specialists about what we need to understand about the coronavirus, a union representative, and more. First up, executive producer Marisa DeMarco has a news update of what we know today, Tuesday, April 28th, as of 5 p.m.
Germany just started trying to slowly relax its lockdown measures, according to Al Jazeera, but early data show transmission of the virus inched back up right away. More than half of the people in the U.S. probably won't be going to public events until there is a proven vaccine, according to an early poll that was just released. And as of today, the U.S. has gone past 1 million confirmed cases. But the true number of infections is much higher. The New York Times reports plenty of people don't know they have the virus, and there's still a shortage of tests. Some disease researchers say that figure might be 10 times higher, so 10 million. The Santa Fe Reporter says the CDC is giving the state $6.6 million to do more COVID testing and contact tracing. There were 153 new cases today, bringing the total to 2,974. And there were six deaths. 110 people in New Mexico have died from the virus. There are 53 new cases in the Navajo Nation, according to the Department of Health there, for a total of 1,769. A special spot for coronavirus patients in Chin Lee Community Center should be up and running this weekend, KOB reports, and another is under construction in Shiprock, plus there's already one in Gallup. Two more people incarcerated in the Bernalillo County Jail tested positive for COVID-19, according to documents the Albuquerque Journal got from an attorney who filed a public records request. It's unclear when the jail knew about the new positive tests. For Your New Mexico Government, I'm Marisa DeMarco.
Now to find out what's going on the front lines, I'm on the line with Tessa Jenner. She's a trauma tech in the UNMH ER. Thanks so much for being with me, Tessa. How's it going?
It's going. Thank you for having me here today.
Wonderful. Yeah, well, thanks for being with us. So how long have you worked at UNMH?
I have worked at UNMH for a little under 2 years.
Okay, and you're a trauma tech. Talk to me about what that job entails.
My job title is technically like ED slash trauma tech. Basically, trauma tech means that I'm trauma trained. So not only do I work in the basic ED in the cubes where we have our regular quote unquote emergencies, sprained ankles, all that good stuff, but I'm also in the trauma bay. So if somebody gets shot, somebody gets stabbed, somebody has a heart attack, that's where they go.
Okay. Now, are you working with COVID patients?
I am, yes. In the ED, we're kind of the redheaded stepchild of medicine because everybody comes in and not everybody has a good story. Not everybody can tell us that if they traveled out, if their symptoms line up with COVID patient symptoms. So we kind of have to assume that everybody is kind of positive and we have to take precautions for that. So in my brain, everybody is positive until proven otherwise, just to protect myself.
So what are your concerns right now?
My concerns are mainly over hazard pay. I'm lucky to be in the ED and feel like I have enough PPE. I think that in other parts of the hospital, they're having a lot harder of a time getting the resources and the PPE that they need. So for me, it feels important to know that I'm being supported financially because I'm lucky enough that I don't have babies and children at home, but I do have a partner and I'm afraid to bring that home to them. And God forbid I got sick, money would be needed to help me like take care of myself while I'm quarantining at home. And I feel like the best way for a hospital to show its workers that they care is by paying them.
Now, given the disciplinary stuff that's coming from UNMH, are you worried about doing this interview?
Yes and no. So I actually printed out the media policy for UNMH before I even considered having this interview. And I read over it. And basically what it says is that if you are representing UNMH, you need to go through the appropriate channels. And I think that the reason that UNMH sent out those disciplinary letters is because it was during that protest in front of the hospital. I mean, obviously it was about UNMH. I think as long as I'm not ragging on the hospital, they're not going to discipline me. And as far as I'm aware, they said that they're not sending out any more disciplinary things for people who talk to the media. But I will definitely update you if anything happens on that front.
Please do. Do you have any words for the people who want the shutdown to end right now. There are people who are protesting, hey, we need to get back to work, we need to make money, which is totally understandable, but maybe they're not grasping the gravity of the situation. What do you have to say to them?
I've been trying to be more empathetic because I am still getting a paycheck. I'm still paying my bills. But it's frustrating because it feels like these people are not fully educating themselves and they're listening to rhetoric that allows for their anger to be placed in a certain place. And I understand the need to have a place to put your anger. Like, this is here to stay. And the more people pretend like it's not, or the more people get angry and go out, like, it's not going to change anything. The only thing that that's going to do is hurt you or your family or the people trying to take care of you.
I want to thank you so much for coming on to the show, taking time and really sharing your story with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, she's Tessa Jenner, trauma tech at UNMH in the ER department. I'm on the line now with Walter Doherty. He is a pediatric infectious disease specialist at UNMH. Walter, thanks for being with me today.
My pleasure.
So tell me, what's your work like right now?
Well, we're still seeing patients, albeit in a slightly different format, doing a lot of virtual visits by Zoom and on telephone, which is a little bit unusual. There's some preparatory work for future surges in the disease that's still ongoing. And we're also doing a lot of research of new therapies and diagnostics for this disease that we're trying to get up and running in a rapid time.
Talk to me a little bit more about that research you're doing.
Unfortunately, we are learning more and more about what this virus does, but we don't necessarily know why the virus does what it does. Once we learn the why, we can oftentimes have an easier time developing better testing, better prognosis and treatments and potentially vaccines.
Okay, now what do you think people need to understand about the coronavirus that they may not?
I think that it can be a little bit misleading in that the media is giving these varied depictions of the virus and will often, depending where you're getting your information from, might tend to say, well, it's quote unquote only killing 2-3% of the population, or overplaying the fact that there might be this large percentage of the population that is infected but not really getting sick, and comparisons to the flu. I think some of the big differences are that, number one, unlike the flu, we don't have a vaccine for this and we don't have a treatment. And most of the death rates, the mortality rates that we're seeing, are substantially higher than we're seeing with influenza. The last point I would bring up is that some people may have this impression that it's going to be a quick surge, we'll have a month or so and then we're done. We don't know when it's going to end, but it could be with us for quite some time, on into the summer and potentially even beyond.
Yeah, and you know, I was about to ask you something of that nature. I was talking to a medical expert out in Chicago, and she was talking about anyone who studies the history of pandemics, you have to understand that they go around the world twice, sometimes three times. Now, as far as your research is concerned and your knowledge base, do you think that that's something that's going to happen?
It could. No one knows for sure, but you bring up a good point about the history of these. The 1918 flu pandemic, for example, had several waves that occurred. And I think one concern might be that without a vaccine and with some of the social distancing we've done, which has really helped, we still may have a large reservoir or supply of people who have not been infected and may not have immunity. And then as the weather starts to get colder again and we see the economy started to reopen and society reopening, we may get hit with another wave.
I gotcha. And finally, what do you make of the way the state and hospitals are responding during the pandemic?
Yeah, I think we've actually done a great job. I think our government has been on top of this from the very beginning. We were one of the earlier states to close down our schools. And so we have been, I think, ahead of the game here compared to many other states. And because of that, we've seen a flattening of the curve. We haven't really at this point had that overloading of the hospital system that we've seen in places like New York and New Orleans. So I feel pretty confident in the way the state's been managing this and our local hospital system.
All right. You heard from him. He's Walter Doherty, pediatric infectious disease specialist at UNMH. Thanks again for being with me, our friend.
My pleasure, and thank you very much.
My next guest came from California's Bay Area to help the Navajo Nation fight COVID-19, and he didn't come alone. I'd like to welcome Dr. Sriram Shamashunda to the show. He is with the University of California, San Francisco's HEAL Initiative. Dr. Shamashunda, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me about UCSF's HEAL Initiative. What is that program?
It's a program that we started about 5 years ago. And, you know, my background is a medical doctor. I was interested. I trained in internal medicine in LA County. And when I was working, we started to understand that when we were taking care of patients, we needed to take care of the whole patient and connect the patient in front of us to a lot of the things that make them sick, such as poverty and structural violence and housing and not enough quality drinking water. And so over the last 5 years, we've trained 150 frontline health professionals across 9 countries. Half of them are U.S. doctors. The other half are either Native Americans, Navajo, or from low and middle income countries such as Malawi, Haiti, Mexico, India. And so it's a really incredibly diverse cohort of frontline health professionals that are all just trying to serve underserved communities and become excellent at that.
Mm-hmm. And you've come recently to the Navajo Nation to help out because of the high number of cases there. How did you build that relationship?
Yeah, so in 2014 or late 2014, we started to understand that in Navajo Nation, even way before COVID-19, it is understaffed, overwhelmed, and underfunded health system. And so we started to partner with them. And over the last 5 years, we've had literally dozens of health professionals, both native and from outside, that have worked across 5 facilities in Navajo Nation.
Okay. Now, when did you all arrive?
We arrived last Wednesday. So today is Tuesday, and so almost a week ago.
Okay. Were you able to jump in and help immediately?
Yes. So we have 21 health professionals, 14 nurses and 7 doctors, some critical care doctors, as well as emergency medicine and critical care, as well as generalist nurses. And so we are spread out across 3 facilities, Gallup, New Mexico, GIMC, and Shiprock. You know, Gallup, as we know, is one of the hardest hit cities in the whole country. And there was an outbreak in a detox center a few weeks ago. And so they needed to figure out fast how to stop the spread and take care of this incredibly vulnerable population.
Mm-hmm. Now, are there any stories that stand out to you in your mind so far as we work to really humanize the pandemic and its impact on people?
There's a couple. I feel like one of the Navajo Nation, one of the critical care providers, were saying that before they intubate a patient, oftentimes in some of the facilities that we're working, they cannot take care of super complex intubated patients. And so they're flying out to Flagstaff or Phoenix or Albuquerque. And so the medical team is taking a pause to really honor and understand what it means for specifically Native and Navajo populations, because once they're intubated, they're flown hundreds of miles off of their land. And if and when they wake up, they're going to be in a different city off the sacred land of Navajo Nation and isolated from family. So it's just another layer that our patients in the Bay Area have had to deal with. I think that stuck out for me.
Yeah. I want to thank you so much for coming on to the show. I want to thank you for all your efforts. Dr. Sriram Shyamasundar, thanks again for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
This is UNM Government. I'm your host, Khalil Ekolona. Every weekday, we're covering the way the virus and health measures are impacting people differently around the state. Stay tuned in weeknights at 7:30 p.m. Last week, the KUNM show Let's Talk New Mexico had Hunter Marshall on as a guest. Hunter was an RN at UNMH, and he spoke about the working conditions he and his colleagues were going through. I caught up with Hunter very early this morning before what he thought was going to be one of his last shifts caring for COVID patients. Here's that conversation. So Hunter, tell me, what are things like for you right now?
Things in the workplace are a little bit hectic, to say the least. I think there's a lot of stress of caring for COVID patients. There's a lot of anxiety associated with it, particularly in light of inadequate PPE. And then on a personal level, as a result of receiving threats of discipline for speaking with the media, I've decided to unfortunately leave the hospital I'm currently employed at and find a place to be able to continue caring for patients elsewhere.
Okay. Tell me about that. Why not stay? It's not yet a disciplinary action. What inspired you to leave?
The bedside nursing right now is really hard. I want to be able to give all my attention to the patients I'm caring for and the families. There's an added stress of uncertainty of not knowing like if and when I will be either disciplined or let go, not of my own volition. I'd like to work somewhere where I'm not going to be distracted with that and can just give all my attention to my patients.
Even though it wasn't a disciplinary action technically, you got a written notice that you were violating hospital policy by speaking with the news media about the conditions that you are working in right now. What do you make of that?
So I understand the hospital wants to create a unified message and be the voice of the organization. That being said, I think that times right now are unprecedented. Mm-hmm. What employees can expect in terms of protection is kind of up in the air. This is going to leave an indelible mark on the culture of healthcare organizations as well as the culture of healthcare professionals. And I feel like collectively we're going to come out of this weaker if we feel that as bedside staff, our voices are being silenced or we're not part of the conversation.
Now, how do some of your colleagues feel about this situation?
I will say that I can think of not one person I work with who's a pure nurse or somebody else who has not been supportive of employees' rights to speak publicly about work safety conditions. We feel, frankly, failed and abandoned by not only the administration of the hospital, but the government on a state and federal level. We signed up to do our jobs with the protective equipment that we are entitled to. We know there's some inherent risk in that, but none of us signed up to be reusing a mask 3 days in a row. There's a nationwide global shortage. I think there needs to be a dialogue about that in which all stakeholders are included rather than silenced.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned on our Let's Talk New Mexico show last week that healthcare workers at UNMH have some concerns about PPE, which you just mentioned. Then there's hazard pay. There's leave. What additional problems are you seeing?
Right now, the PPE situation in terms of the practices have gotten worse, not better. We're being told to extend the use of our masks even further than we have. I know the hospital will say they're maintaining safety. I respectfully disagree. So yeah, we feel abandoned. And to hear the hospital say like our healthcare heroes or the government seems a little bit disingenuous. I would rather have an apology than a thanks. I would rather hear, we are sorry that the system failed you. You are left unprotected or inadequately protected in a way that makes you feel scared for not only yourself, but perhaps your family. And thank you for doing what you continue to do in spite of that lack of protection.
Yeah. Apologies in every case. I mean, one has to acknowledge where they were wrong. Let me ask you this lastly. You know, a lot of people are calling to reopen the state or violating the shutdown order. What do you think when you hear that?
I was just on the phone with some family members last night, and the economic impact of this is devastating for many, many people, some in my own family. That being said, I feel like right now I'm doing my place in the bigger picture to minimize the devastating impact this is having across our country. Mine is going to work taking care of these people who have this disease. Right now, the public's job, as I see it, is to stay home and minimize spread. I know we are getting closer to a place where we can safely reopen, but I want it to be reopening based on science, not the desire to leave the house. Because trust me, I want to get out too. I'm seeing nobody because I know I'm a higher risk person. I miss that. But I would please ask folks who are considering that. Right now, we still do not have enough of many essential medications for treating respiratory distress syndrome, or we don't have enough PPE. Please, please, like, let's wait until we have the supplies, tools, and equipment that healthcare providers like myself and the physicians I work with need to take care of folks, give them the best possible care and the shot at the best possible outcome. And then let's think about that.
Hunter Marshall, thank you very much for taking time at the beginning of your day to speak with me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for continuing to keep the public informed and our institutions accountable during these times.
After our very early interview today, Hunter contacted us to say that when he showed up to work this morning, his badge didn't work and he wasn't on the schedule. His last day was supposed to be Friday. He'd missed an email his manager sent to him a few days ago. He was informed that the hospital is paying him out for his remaining days and didn't want him to come back to work. So he is Hunter Marshall, former UNMH nurse. Mark Rudy, spokesperson for UNMH, said the hospital could not comment on what happened with Marshall. He did, however, send along a general written statement that said that there are other opportunities to express concerns with supervisors and regularly held town halls. We'll have the whole written statement on this post online at KUNM.org. KUNM's Megan Kamrick got an interview with UNM Hospital doctors Eve Espy and Steve McLaughlin, who are on the PPE committee, and raised some of Hunter Marshall's concerns with them. Here's some of that interview.
I know you both are probably very busy these days. Thank you for taking time to talk with me. So our producers on Your New Mexico Government spoke with Hunter Marshall, who's a nurse in the COVID unit, for tonight's episode. He said he wanted to be clear, he's not disparaging the hospital or anyone making decisions with regard to PPE practices. But he said, given the global shortage of PPE, he said he feels there needs to be more of a dialogue about those realities in which all the stakeholders are included. So let me just ask both of you, how are you engaging with your frontline healthcare workers as you make these decisions every day?
The structure of the PPE committee aside, because that was also, I think, a very inclusive process that has involved nursing, physicians, supply chain, facilities, and leadership. When we started, we came up with guiding principles that prioritized patient and employee safety first, and also being good stewards of our PPE through utilization of the guidelines. You know, after the process of coming up with the guidelines, we have done over 20 individual unit-specific Zoom meetings to talk to everybody on the unit.
So Hunter indicated that many of the nurses on his unit have procured on their own reusable respirators that can be wiped down after each use. And he says many other hospitals are fit testing staff for these masks to make sure that they fit appropriately. This allows them to free up additional masks since we have a shortage of PPE. But I gather UNMH does not want people to use these. Can you tell me why?
It's not that UNMH does not want people to use the appropriate respirators. It's that the hospital has the appropriate equipment available for our staff and for our providers at this time. We also have processes in place to ensure that all of that PPE is in working order and is functional. That's one of the concerns that we have about people bringing in their own PPE, is that those processes are not in place as they are for the hospital-based respirators.
The hospital has done a phenomenal job acquiring a wide range of equipment, and we're in a situation where we have the equipment that we need to follow the CDC guidelines, for example, around keeping the workforce safe.
Just a quick follow-up. He says he and others still don't necessarily feel safe when, instead of that option being considered, their own PPE that they bought, they're being asked to extend the use of masks for up to 3 days and use masks that have been worn and decontaminated with vaporized hydrogen peroxide. Can you address the safety of doing that?
We are following well-established guidelines, including CDC guidelines, in order to ensure safety today with an appropriate supply today, as well as safety throughout what's looking like a longer term need to be able to fight the pandemic. We are utilizing the same best practices that are being utilized both locally and nationally, as well as globally.
The only thing I would add to that is that the timeline for what looks kind of like a plateau phase at the moment. So we're looking at continuing to take care of COVID-19 patients for months, maybe a year. And as we look very carefully at the equipment we have, how we're using it, how the supply chain is coming in, which is a piece of this, our goal is to make sure that people are safe today, but also that they're still being protected in 6 months.
Well, Eve Espy and Steve McLaughlin, thank you for talking with me this afternoon. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Megan.
So many thanks to KUNM host and reporter Megan Kamrick for bringing us this conversation. To find out more about union protections for healthcare workers, I'd like to welcome Eleanor Chavez to the show. She's the executive director of the National Union of Hospital and Healthcare Employees, District 199 for the great state of New Mexico. Eleanor, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with me.
Oh, no problem.
We've heard from Hunter Marshall, he's a former nurse at UNMH, that he was threatened with disciplinary action for speaking to the media about healthcare worker concerns at UNMH. They said he agreed to a policy not to talk to the media. Question for you, is that legal?
The policy that they're talking about is hospital's own internal policy. It says that employees or whoever at the university, you know, should go through them. And that does not cover employees who are speaking out about health and safety concerns, which is what he was doing. And then the other piece that protects him because he is a public employee is the First Amendment. He has the right to free speech.
Okay. All right. Have you heard of this kind of thing from anyone else?
There's at least one other employee who is also threatened with discipline. So the action that the union has taken is that we have filed with whistleblower complaints against UNMH for at least two employees at the hospital.
Now, some hospitals, in specific UNMH and Loveless, in this state, they were not releasing the number of staff members who have contracted COVID-19. Why would they be refusing to produce those numbers?
That's a good question. And I think that that could speak to the kind of internal safety procedures that they are taking. You know, we do know that one of the COVID units, we have had at least 10 workers who have been quarantined. The hospitals are not providing them with the kind of protective personal equipment that they should be. There's equipment out there that is not disposable, that is easily disinfected, and that is way more protective than, you know, just an N95 mask or a face shield.
We've also seen hospitals laying off staff and people around the state. What's the union's take on that?
So obviously our position would be that there should be no layoffs, especially in some of these areas where the hospital is able to receive money from the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two pieces to that. Some of the hospitals have received, you know, that first round of COVID monies. And then the other piece is they also got advanced Medicare payments. And so we're seeing RNs, specifically hours, being cut in half. So they're going from 40 hours a week to 20 hours a week. So that's another way that the hospital is reducing their costs by sending workers home without pay. If they want to use their leave banks, they can. But again, the workers are really bearing the brunt of this crisis.
I mean, this is a pandemic that seems problematic. Shouldn't this be an all hands on deck type of situation?
That's our position. I mean, we think that there's work in the hospital that can be found for the great majority of the workers. Simple things like, you know, keeping the place clean. You know, there might be other kinds of tasks within the hospital that, you know, some of these healthcare workers could be doing.
Finally, what are the union's plans moving forward on those things? What steps are you all taking?
So we're continuing to insist that all of the hospitals provide the kind of PPE that these workers need, that they not have to take their own leave time. And if any of them have had to take it, then our position is that the hospital should reimburse those leave banks. And so we also want to look at, you know, what should healthcare look like when we come out of this pandemic? Because the reality is the pandemic has shown that the system is broken and that we definitely cannot continue to follow a for-profit business model in healthcare.
Yeah. I want to thank you again for coming on to the show. She's Eleanor Chavez, Executive Director, the National Union of Hospital and Healthcare Employees, District 199, New Mexico. Thanks again, Eleanor.
You're welcome.
Tomorrow's show, coming home to a shutdown. Tomorrow, we take a look into what life is like for those exiting rehab facilities and correctional centers during COVID-19. What are folks coming home to? How are people in recovery navigating this time of social isolation? Tomorrow on YNMG at 7:30 p.m. Are you a hospital worker? What are you worried about? How are you doing? We want to hear about it. Leave us a message and we can roll it into our shows next week. Call 505-218-7084 and share your story or email yournmgov@gmail.com. Resources, resources, resources. Find a full list of resources we talk about on each episode and opportunities to donate or help online at bit.ly/YNMG Hub. If you're a healthcare worker who wants more info on the union, head to nmhospitalworkersunion.com. Learn more about University of California San Francisco's HEAL program. Head to healthhospitalmedicine.ucsf.edu. If you're a hospital worker and need help with childcare or other things, head to coronacarenm.com. Your New Mexico Government is executive produced by Marisa DeMarco. It's produced by yours truly, the News Update by Marisa DeMarco. Super big thanks to Megan Kamrick for her contributions and a super huge shout out to Taylor Velasquez and Bryce Dick for making the editing happen. Theme music done by Pope Yes Yes Y'all. Hear us all week long on KUNM's airwaves at 7:30 p.m. online. Find the show on KUNM.org or subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. Your New Mexico Government is a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, and the Santa Fe Reporter. Funding for our coverage is provided in part by the Thornburg Foundation, the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, the New Mexico Local News Fund, and KUNM listeners like you. For everyone here at Your New Mexico Government, I'm Khalil Lake Alona. Thanks for listening.